On this edition of Prose, you'll be hearing Barbara Barracks reading Chapter 10 of Pleasure, her novel in progress. Barbara teaches writing workshops to children and older people. Her chapbook, No Sleep, is published by Tumber Press. She's a 1977 CAPS Award winner in fiction, has written art criticism for Art Forum magazine, and is editor and publisher of Big Deal, a literary and arts magazine.
It began near the beginning of seventh grade while I was squatting on the floor in school eating a sandwich. No one else was around here at the place where the doors of the cafeteria and the gymnasium meet, exchanging smells. I like to hide out in special places so I don't have to look at the disgusting way food slobbers around their mouths when they eat. I'd rather watch shoes moving past. Hers came up to me, and she sat next to me, so I couldn't help seeing who she was. "That's a smart idea, bringing it from home," Ida said. I was playing close attention. I knew she was talking about the sandwich. I nodded. After that, we talked sometimes, but only when no one else was around. Ida didn't want to screw up her reputation with the popular kids. Now Ida opened a little white bag from the bakery. "I got you a cookie," she said. We went over to her parents' place in Stuyvesant Town, floors with carpets everywhere, even in the bathroom. She showed me around. Her father was a teacher, she told me. Her brother was in law school, and her mother was in law school, too. She had a sister who went to Stuyvesant High, where they do science all day. I'm surprised her pet rabbit wasn't a chiropractor. What was Ida doing in my crummy junior high? She transferred somewhere special after eighth grade, so she could fit into the apartment. She shut the door to her room. No one knocked, threatened to come in. No one was home, while we played with her typewriter and stereo, all on their ledges in the paneling her father had built. Air conditioning was part of the plumbing in this place. The only part of summer it left was the sun through the window, dropping a gold rectangle on the bed. The rectangle was warm. We lay on it. The stereo was over the bed. Ida reached up and fiddled with the knobs. "This is The Clash," she told me, turning up the volume. "The music?" I said. Ida's eyes never thought I was funny. "Don't be dumb." Ida had snuck in a bottle of whiskey from her parents' liquor cabinet. I had my pencil case of dope. We decided on the way over here to compare the effects of marijuana and alcohol. I'd begin with dope and Ida with booze, then switch. So far, I was becoming stupid and Ida sick. Maybe, I thought, as the joint charred my thumb and forefinger, this would bring us closer together. The sun pressed needles in my eyes. The soft knobs of the bedspread pressed thumbs in my back. A thought slowly spiraled in my brain. Time for us to switch. I handed Ida a joint, and the first swig of booze I took when she handed me the bottle spluttered me awake. Not too awake. Get puffed up enough, and the world would do the work for me. Ida was chattering about something. Usually I'd be so excited to think of Ida talking to me. It's better now this way, I thought. When I don't care, she talks harder, becomes more urgent. I noticed the air in the room was expanding, pushing me down. We were so high up here, this room was 12 stories up. We could be in an airplane. Time to be sleepy again, but Ida grabbed my arm to shake me awake. Was it a fire so soon? She had a secret she wanted to tell me. No one knew it, she said. She was pretty. She looked the way she did when she was explaining something to the teacher, all prepared with little pauses. She kept her hand on my arm, the ridges of her long fingernails just barely pressed against my skin. A secret not even anyone in gym class knew. So, I said. I struggled to sit up. This might be a joke, to take back to school later, to make me a fool. It was hard for her to get my attention. So she took off her blouse and her bra and showed me her inverted nipples. She told me they were inverted nipples. Then I knew Ida was my friend. The brown circles were like little caps, except the centers turned inward to modest pinpricks. I'd never seen anything like this. I was embarrassed to see. "If you have a baby," I asked, "will you feed it?" "My mother says that when the baby's mouth tickles them, they'll just pop out," she told me. "Yeah?" I was brave this way, doubting. "Look, I'll show you. I watched Ida's right nipple emerge under her stroking finger, then, after a few moments in the sun, recede back in. I was impressed. "Not bad, huh?" Ida said. "Not bad. She was a genius." I wanted to turn, too, but there was no way to ask. Maybe that's what she wanted. She was enough of a genius to get me to ask for something, so she could say no. "I'm not that dumb. I know when to stop and when to stop looking." "I gotta go," I said. The air conditioning was making goose pimples in Ida's bare skin. She needed to cover it up. She was staring at me like I was crazy. "Go," she said. Then she was angry, like she'd get at boys in school. "Oh, then go, hurry up." I did. I ran. I was so fed up and confused, I even left my pencil case behind. I'd have to steal another and buy new dope. The elevator took me downstairs, and after that, I was on my own. I was weaving down the street, and I could see myself weaving down the street. I'd never had so much booze and dope alone, much as less together. "Watch out, girlie," some kid on my block called. I was on the last stretch home from Ida's. They were playing ball, but I decided not to watch out. The ball missed me and rolled in the gutter. With magnificent sweep to the right, I scooped it up and threw it in the middle of the kid's stomach. Not too messed up for that. Then I laughed, loud and ugly, and kept on going. The ball flew past my head. Missed me by a yard. Past my building. "Go pick it up, little crybaby," I called. I had the keys out already and was safe in the hall. Slow, as if grown to 90, I started up the stairs. The way it was now, I couldn't tell if kids messing around were fighting or huffing. Neither could they. At the top of the stairs, I dropped my keys down to the next landing, but finally I got in. This was the time when, at night, just before the cliff into sleep, I would startle awake, remembering that someday I was going to die. I could wheedle anything else, but I couldn't get out of this. Neither could Lily. On those nights, I couldn't hear her over in the next bed. Maybe she was asleep or waiting, thinking about the same things I was. Maybe Lily had identical thoughts to me all the time. Maybe she was planning my mind. She might have put the idea of death in my head. No one else I knew had it. When I was a little kid, I'd jump out of bed, run whimpering through the dark into the bright living room where Pauline sat knitting. I'd climb on her lap and bury my head in her stomach, curled up there, fiercely trying not to explain, my tongue tickling against her black wool sweater. It was winter and steaming white mountains rose from the radiator. Pauline's needles kept right on knitting above me. The flap of material hanging from the needles brushed my head again and again. I was waiting for the progress of the cloth to lower enough to cover me up, a warm breathing thing inside Pauline's clothes. I tried to imitate her breathing, but she didn't breathe enough. I was choking. She only breathed half as much as I did. I coughed. The wool scratched me all over, and Pauline, maybe laughing, fished me out. "What are you doing here?" she said, as if she hadn't noticed me all this time. But I wasn't a little kid now. Coming up the hall, I heard someone start to lean on a car horn outside. It was closer in the apartment. I crawled onto my bed and thought about my revenge. The blade slices into the flesh, neat, like making sandwiches. The body tries to turn and squirm away, but I don't allow that. This meat and the tubes inside are all mine. Who today? It will be Pauline first. Ah, ah. Ah, cut the body around the belly into three slices, the stuff inside like strudel or stuffed cabbage, blood spilling out, gravy all over the place. Sop it up with rye bread, stupid. Then it gets cold, the whole mess congeals, no good anymore. A good way to get her. Another way, to get them all. The stairs turn to slivers of glass beneath them as they walk upstairs. No, not glass, to razors, slicing them up. There's no place to get away. The banisters are razor, too. So are the walls, the doorknobs. I would know, though, staying up inside here for weeks, blood smell seeping under the door, then the smell of dead bodies. Finally, people in the outside world would notice. Crowds gather while police put on special suits, metal spacesuits to protect them against the razors, oxygen tanks against the smell. They can't believe this. They clump up the stairs. I jump from the window. I must have slept, because when I opened my eyes, the sun had changed. I was really sick now. Ida and I had gulped all that bottle. Ida probably hated me now. I probably hated her. I had a good thought, though, that she must be even sicker than me right now. I had the better deal hogging the joint. It made me think better of her. I don't know what she was like. She was driving me crazy. Lily shuffled into the room now. I gave her a mean look and turned away. Lately at night, Lily and I built a running conversation. One of us would start babbling and the other joined in, water spilling into the room, filling it with noise. When Lily wouldn't sound, I'd pinch her. That would get her started. Finally, I'd fall silent, hearing her go on, a lullaby, putting me to sleep. But now, in this daylight, she sat in her rocking chair and squeaked, on purpose, I'm sure, to make me pay attention. Over the squeaks, she was popping her lips again. She thought she was queen of this room, and I was this little slave running around fixing it all up for her. So humiliating, the way Ida planned everything. She even asked me twice if I really kept dope in the pencil case. She even had the pencil case now. "Stop rocking," I yelled. I turned over on the bed. Lily looked at me for a moment. The red inside skin around her eyes bulged out. Then she rocked again. "Stop it," I yelled. Her lips twitched. She might be laughing. She raised a knuckle and pressed in the flesh right next to the nose. Lily only did that when scared by the TV blaring on or Pauline and me fighting. I could scare her all by myself. Her eyes focused on me. My head was enormous and dry, but I sat up on the bed. Her eyes followed me. I would make her feel bad. She did it to me enough. I had to pull the food out of her mouth when she choked. I went up behind her rocking chair. Her terrified head followed me, slowly, carefully. This was my room, my mother. I put my hands around her neck. Someone had shown me where the arteries were. I found them in myself. They pumped. Blood flowed through her neck as easily as mine. Did they both go up, or was one for the blood going down? I couldn't feel that. It wasn't like waves. I had forced Lily's head to look forward. She didn't mind doing that. She sat rigid, each hand on the rocking chair's armrest, like it was an electric chair. Even the chair was still, poised, tipped forward. Lily's skin was dry. Everything inside it stuck out. I pressed, just very lightly. I could feel the things inside pushing back. Her hair needed washing again, its thick oils, her smell. I let go of the blood pipes so I could move my fingers around her neck. "I could choke you instead," I said, tickling the wattle under her chin. But the game wasn't as good now. I didn't as much believe it. I had no reason to believe anything. Besides, something was coming up in me. I thought I was going to throw up, but this was stranger than that. Even though my stomach was sick, this came from the air in my chest. I threw my arms around Lily's shoulders and bent over, my mouth below her ear. I began to cry. That didn't move her so much either. But I was impressed. Look at that, crying like anyone else, like in the movies. Like when I was a little kid and was afraid of death. Now I was crying because Ida had shown me her nipples and nobody liked me. 2 weeks later, Ida and I were surrounded by magic markers. I'd put her to work for me. We were supposed to be making posters, but she was finishing about 1 to my 7. She drew a letter and stopped. "Where's your mother?" she asked, always harping on my mother. I put her in the kitchen for a while. "It's incredible, Amy. You get to put your mother in the kitchen for a while." "Yeah." A radio below in the street was ladling out music to the block. We listened to How Smart It Was for a few minutes. "The magic marker's coming through. It's getting on the floor," Ida told me. "Use an orange one, then. It matches the floor color better." As usual, when Ida was around, I thought about Ida. Why was Ida such a rotten person? I never could get to the bottom of it. She could be rotten in so many ways. I wasn't going to look up. Instead, I picked a magic marker and lettered a poster. "Amy's Delivery Service, famous in the Lower East Side. Cheap, reliable, cheap. Dial 723-9037. Leave your message today." Then I colored in every loop of every letter. Then I did something I hadn't done on the 17 other posters I'd made today. I drew a little sketch on the bottom of a girl rushing around with something in her arms. I squinted at the drawing. It looked too much like she was carrying around a baby. So I drew around the bundle some string tied in a floppy green bow. That girl looked right towards the edge of the paper with a red smile on the visible side of her face. I surrounded her with orange squiggles to show speed. That girl didn't feel how I did now. She could glide right through this room and sweep Ida and everything up after her. Pauline always cut my hair too short, so the bangs couldn't sweep into my eyes like Ida's. Sitting here looking at my drawing, I tried to stretch my hair a little, a few strands at a time, to catch up with Ida. I couldn't catch up with summer camp, though. Ida would be leaving soon for a month, while Pauline wouldn't even let me go to the crummy Y-run day camp. She said if she filled out the form, someone might investigate. For what? I said. There's nothing wrong. They'd investigate to find out, Pauline said. Then they'd mess things up. That's their job, what they're paid for. So it's simple, kid. You don't fill out their forms, and then they don't come to investigate. I was going to tell Pauline she was crazy, but I stopped. Either she already knew, or she didn't want to hear it. Of course, I filled out the forms myself and signed her name on them, but they called up to check, probably because I had to make up a lot of numbers and things I didn't know. The metallic clicks over the other end of the phone clicked against me. I saw them cut at Pauline's ear. Her eyes translated them for me. She said, "The kid did it. Throw it away. Forget it," and hung up. I didn't mind getting walloped. That was fair. But it wasn't fair for Larry to tell me 3 weeks later he and Pauline were getting married. Enough posters. And I was tired of thinking, so I took Ida outside. She was doing anything I told her to today. I carried everything. I'd like to. Posters, a sheaf under each arm, a fat roll of freezer tape pressing inside my back pocket. The plan was to put a poster over everybody else's poster in the street. That way, everyone would see me instead of the punk rock groups. I did as good as they did, and I'd been working on these posters all week. Ida held the posters up while I taped them down, all the way down First Avenue. Going up Second Avenue, we switched. Like the dope and booze thing again, except instead of getting sick, I got tired. "Let's get a soda," Ida finally said. We went to the luncheonette I bought Pauline's newspaper at. The man behind the counter was the one who thought it was a big joke to tell me the Daily News cost 16 cents. "The extra penny is tax unless you pay it with a kiss," he'd say. "Kiss yourself," I'd say, and the old guys would crack up, elbows bouncing up and down on the counter next to their coffee cups. At the bottom of my soda, I had an idea. "Did you ever see the dirty magazines?" I asked Ida. They were racked in the back next to the ones on cars. We slipped away from the counter to look. Ida studied a few ones carefully. I'd seen them all, so I watched her. As she leafed through, I tried to tell if the bright printed colors reflected on her face. Finally, she put them away. "It's so ugly close up," she said, smiling slightly. "Would you do it for $1,000?" I asked. "Are you kidding? I'd do it for $20. Her harsh laugh wasn't hers. It drew the counterman to us. "What are you kids doing back there?" he called, wading through his own piles of junk. "Hey, you girls aren't supposed to look at that." Afraid, I stumbled back and knocked over a pile of magazines. "Fucking kids," he hollered. We began to run. "No fucking kids, always messing with my skins." What a great day. We ran then because we felt like it, and because I didn't have anything to carry, I'd left the tape on the counter. All the way across to my block, where, as usual, everyone was hanging out on the Puerto Rican side. The landlords had worked it out that way. But I could walk on that side any time of the day and night, because I got along with the kids fine. They never told me to cuff off, and I kept my mouth shut. Ida, though, was a new thing there. She stuck close to me. They were hanging out in front of the store and talking about the big scandal of the summer. All the time they talked about a girl, Hosley, who used to sleep with Manuel, a blind boy who had a chair of his own in front of the grocery store. The girls all called Hosley queer, and Margarita was in charge of the name calling. Every summer night when we were about to drop dead with boredom and heat, she'd bring us new gifts of insults. She tossed her hair and began, "Hosley's really a boy. She's a butch." I like to call her that, a butcher, because she likes meat, both kinds. She's queer. Margarita would smile and then continue. She steals. Her whole family steals, and they tell each other what they're doing to keep safe against us. Margarita especially hated Rosalie because Manuel had stupidly told Margarita he'd slept with her. Now Margarita told his secret over and over to everyone. She made him famous. Margarita knew a lot about fame. She was called Margie when she wanted to sound American. She had the longest brown legs. Everyone knew Manuel was crazy about her, though even though he was blind, he wasn't allowed to touch her legs or much of anything else. But I knew he could tell she was beautiful just from the way she acted, heightened her voice, strutted around. Sometimes she condescended to lead him around since he didn't own a blind cane, and he'd feel her hands brush against his back and shoulders. Everyone watched. He sucked in his breath to make his happiness last as long as possible. This time, Margarita took him out of his chair, and they walked up and down the sidewalk. As they walked, she laughed and winked at us. We were all cracking up, and he moved his slow head to translate our sounds into something he could manage to make acceptable to his veins. "Manuel," Margarita shrieked, "how could you do it with that butcher?" "Margarita," he said, "you are getting to be some wild girl. Oh, Margie, you are really some crazy." Margarita winked at the air, at us, and put Manuel back in the stuffed chair. His fingers nervously pulled at fabric while his bland, wide mouth tried to reveal nothing. Margarita sat on the armrest next to him, the soft inside of her elbow brushing now and then the back of his neck. She tossed her hair again, showed her face to our eyes, and cued our comments in. Men on the street floated by, laughing and drinking beer. None of them made any remarks towards Margarita. Everyone here knew she had family. "If I see that Rosalie, I'm going to fight," Margarita said, sticking out her chest under a faded Linda Ronstadt T-shirt. "That butch will remember me." Manuel tried to look indifferent, but being blind, he didn't know how. He was totally confused now, and Margarita pounced. "You, Manuel, why do you have to tell everyone when you do your business with her?" "Oh, Margie," he giggled, his hands fumbling at each other. "I didn't mean everyone to know." "You're a liar," she said, and hit him lightly, slapped him in the face just under the frame of his dark glasses. He blushed the color of red wine, and when I looked closely, why not, he couldn't tell, I could see his eyes blinking and tearing behind the glasses. It was all a big test, with the boys, Ida with me, Margarita with Manuel, Manuel with Rosalie. Nobody ever did anything, not really. I was sure of it. It was all just made up, all this stuff. It's a good thing I'm not dumb like Manuel, though. Ida was just enough of a genius to trap me into doing something to make me look queer. I wasn't going to let her fool me into it.
You've been listening to Barbara Barracks reading Chapter 10 of Pleasure, her novel in progress. Prose was produced for WBAI by Sharon Matlin and was made possible by listener support.